Let's start with the topic of slavery. Okay, everything I'm telling you today over here is coming from this sefer. I call it a sefer because it really is a sefer called Headlines Number 3. In the shiur over the last years, Baruch Hashem, we've gone through 1 and 2. I think we've gone through the entire thing, the entire one, all the relevant topics. Not every topic is relevant for our shiur. Okay, we have to be careful what we talk about. But this is a very timely topic, and this is a new edition, a third volume. This volume I find to be much, not nice to say, but I find it to be better than the other two volumes. It's very well written. Okay, not that I'm a mumche to tell you how to write what's well written or not, but it's really powerful. It's really written well, and the topics, the material is thorough. Very, very thorough. Every topic, he goes through the sugya inside out. And this all comes from a radio show. By the way, this is all on the radio, Mitzvah Shabbos. They claim they have, an astronomical number of downloads and listeners who tune in live to listen to the show every Mitzvah Shabbos. And his goal is always to talk about controversial topics. And he's very well prepared, very well researched, and he has guests. He always brings on rabbanim to comment, and it's good. It's really good stuff. It's fantastic. I highly recommend you get a copy of this and read it from cover to cover a few times. There's a lot to learn, a lot of very nice yesodis. Now let's start off with the topic of slavery. Slavery in America is a very ugly stain on American history. And when we hear about slavery, we right away get a little bit worked up. Because as Orthodox Jews, the first thing that comes to mind is Avodim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. We were slaves in Egypt. And we worked Avodas Perach. Crushing hard labor. And Chazal tell us, the different Mamar Chazal, Pisim Ramses were built on quicksand, which means that our efforts were worthless. It's one thing that if you involved in a crushing labor and you have something to be proud of. Person, I mean, I don't know, people who built the battery tunnel, okay? The battery tunnel. I can't imagine it was a lot of fun. And it certainly wasn't good for their health to go down into these digging tunnels underground and using dynamite. I'm assuming the people there who dug the tunnels, they died. They died from the poison toxins they inhaled. Digging the tunnel. It can't be the people who were involved in digging the battery tunnel didn't die because of their efforts.
Brooklyn Bridge is much worse.
Brooklyn Bridge is more.
Yeah, right. Not the tunnel, Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, why were the Brooklyn
the
Bridge?
The tunnel, they pulled in pieces.
Yeah, the tunnel was built much later. The tunnel
was
built
It was more technology, more technology. Yeah. Okay, so it's very scary. You drive over the Brooklyn Bridge, people literally gave up their lives. They literally gave up their lives to build this bridge. That's a very frightening concept. Okay, 9/11, after the towers came down, the government knew good and well that the first responders don't belong there. The air is toxic, poisonous. And they took tests. Oh, it's okay. It wasn't okay. Today they're paying out millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to the people that went to clean up 9/11 and to involve themselves in a futile search for remains when they knew no one could have survived. So what are they doing? Tell everyone, get out of there. Get out of the place. The place is a graveyard. It's toxic. You're going to die. You're going to inhale this stuff. You're going to die. What's going on? No. They told me it's okay. You can go. We know now in hindsight that was a crime. It was a crime. And no one's getting this attention. It's not in the news. No one's being held accountable for allowing the first responders to remain there for prolonged periods of time, which we know now they became very, very sick. America was built through slaves. Listen, let's not hide. Let's not make believe. And the cruelty and the activities they were involved in, they gave their lives. So when we benefit from the infrastructure, from going on the bridges, the tunnels, the roads, much of America was built through slaves, the infrastructure that we have today. Okay, listen, you have to study the history. There are some things that are exaggerations, that are gross exaggerations, that are outright lies. We know that in America, you can get away with outright lies. And there are exaggerations, but there is a kernel of truth here and there also. Okay, there is a kernel of truth. He has here an account. He has here in the beginning of this article an account, a first account of what it was of the slave transport, how slaves were brought to America. They were literally kidnapped. What it says in the Torah, loy tignaif. The slave traders, they went to Africa and other countries, and they literally violated what it says in the Aseres Hadibus, the Ten Commandments, loy tignaif. What does it mean, loy tignaif? Do not steal another human being.
Actually, most of the slaves were kidnapped by their fellow African tribes and sold.
And Arabs.
Okay, so they were kidnapped by somebody. They were kidnapped. Why? Because there were buyers here in America desperately waiting to purchase them. There's a market.
In Russia, the Cantonists, the kidnappers, the Jews, the Chapers.
The Khmelnytsky massacres, a lot of the Khmelnytsky massacres happened against the backdrop of slave trades, of slave trading. People don't know about it. That's something which is only being understood now. There was a fantastic article about a year ago, very long article in either Ami magazine or Mishpacha magazine by a big professor, giving you the background to what was really going on, the real tragedy of the Khmelnytsky massacres. And a lot of it has to do with slave trades, slave traders.
The slave would have polished
it was much more, I don't remember the details, but it was a real eye-opener. Okay, it's not the way they make it sound when you go to on Tisha B'Av, to a Tisha B'Av program, they tell you about, oh, don't forget about the Khmelnytsky massacres. It's a lot more complicated than the way they present Ukraine and Poland and land and taxes and anti-Semitism. It's very, very, there are many elements that involve slavery and the greed and the money that's involved in slavery. So there's no question, slavery in America is a very, very big problem. It really, really is. And when you read the history, study the history, and you learn the real facts, it's frightening. It really is frightening. George Washington himself had over 100 slaves. Okay? George Washington, 100 slaves. Not so poshut. We were slaves. So what? When we hear about slavery, the Orthodox Jew, we brush over, couldn't care less. You know why we couldn't care less? Because it's etched into our psyche. Avodim hayinu lefaro. Hashem took us out of slavery. We sold Yosef as a slave. What more do you want than that? Unfortunately, we are guilty. We know all about it because we sold the 10 brothers, sold their younger brother Yosef as a slave to Mitzrayim. And he was humiliated. He was stripped naked, it says in Chazal. And he went from one slave dealer to another slave dealer. And ultimately, he made his way down to Mitzrayim by Potiphar in a dungeon. The conditions were horrific. And he pulled out of it. Yosef became the Mishnah Lamelech. So in our minds, you know, slavery is not so bad. Because Avadim in Lefaro, and we survived. Look where we are today, we're on top of the world today. Yosef, he was sold as a slave. What happened to him? He became the Mishnah Lamelech. So when we talk about an Orthodox Jew, when we talk about slavery, we got a problem. We have a very big problem. Because our minds are warped when it comes to slavery, because we were slaves, and we study slavery, the history of our slavery, literally nonstop. And we know about the horrors. We know that in Mitzrayim, when they did not have enough bricks, so they took Jewish children and they murdered them and substituted children for bricks. So, and yet, we survived. Here we are. Here we are with all of the horrors of building peace in the Ramses, which was built on quicksand. And there was no satisfaction building something that we have something to be proud of. As I was trying to say in the beginning, at least the people in America who built America, they gave up their lives, the slaves who were mistreated, who gave up their lives to build the infrastructure of America, at least in Shemayim, whatever that means, I don't know, no one knows what goes on in the other world, they can look down and they can say, look, they built America. Every single day a person, he walks the streets of America, it's because of me. Because of me, I contributed something valuable. In Mitzrayim, we did nothing to show for ourselves. We built Pisan V'Ramses. By design, it was something which was worthless. Because it was known that you'll build this city, and in a year from now, the city will disappear. It will sink into the ground.
Why should the Egyptians have...
To break, to crush our spirit. To crush our spirit. They didn't need us. To crush our spirit. Because if we would know that we built a city, so we would be proud of it.
You remember my line about that? It was built in, obsolescent, right? I said, and that's how you know it was a government project.
Exactly, exactly. Build a bridge to nowhere. Bridge to nowhere. So we got a problem. We Orthodox Jews, when we talk about slavery, we really have a problem because I really think that we don't sympathize. We don't have enough empathy. It's a real problem. It's not something to make light of. The people. I'm no fan of any of this. The violence that's going on today is just criminal, beyond criminal, beyond criminal. I don't want to explode and say nasty things, but that's how I feel. That's how everyone feels. But there is a problem. It's something that it's not so simple just to ignore the history of America, of how it all came about. And when you read the graphic descriptions of what went on, it's horrific. And unfortunately, there are a lot of parallels between the way the slaves were treated to the way Jews were treated in the Holocaust. It's a scary thing to say, but it's absolutely true. Okay, some of the conditions, some of the labor, and some of the way they were transported, it's unbelievable. It's shocking how one human being can treat another human being in such a grotesque fashion. And these are real crimes against humanity. There's no kidding. There's nothing to talk about. We as Orthodox Jews, it doesn't register with us because we suffered the horrors of the Holocaust. And we suffered. We come from a nation of Avod Minu Lefaro, so there's definitely a problem. There really definitely is a problem in acknowledging and in focusing on the issues. But after you go through all the sources and the topic of this chapter, it's really amazing how you walk away. Well, first of all, let me say it like this. There's another problem. The other problem with slavery from a perspective of halacha is there are major, major contradictions, signals in Chazal that are completely the opposite. Mitzad echad, we have a pasuk that says about an Eved Kenani, le'olam bohem ta'avodu. There's a pasuk that says if you have an Eved Kenani, it is... Now, by the way, before you go further, let me just stop, make it very, very clear. We're not discussing an Eved Ivri. There are two types of slaves in the Torah. There's what's called an Eved Kenani and an Eved Ivri. An Eved Kenani means a non-Jew, a non-Jewish slave. And an Eved Ivri means basically a worker. An Eved Ivri, you call him an Eved. He's not really an Eved. He's a worker, someone who works for you. You agree that he'll work for you for 6 years, a six-year contract. He moves into your house. And you have an obligation to fully support him and his wife and his children, and he will do whatever you want, anything that you need done, he has a duty to do for you. But the responsibility that you have to him is mind-boggling. You have to treat him basically better than you treat yourself. The food that he eats is no different than when you feed yourself. The accommodations have to be exactly the same. Kolokoine eved. So if you have in your possession a Jewish slave, a full-fledged Jew, who for whatever reason committed a crime, and he needs to pay back pay back money for his crime. And the only way he can do that is by selling himself to you to work. I need help in the house. So I'm willing to pay someone $50,000 a year to live in the house and to do everything I need done. So multiply that by six. And that's the amount of money I'm going to give you. He takes the money in one lump sum in advance. He pays off his debts. And then he sits in your home for 6 years and does every single thing that you want him to do. Plus, in addition, you're going to provide him with board and in a place to sleep and give him food. He's like a king in your house. We're not discussing the Eved Ivri. We're discussing the Eved Kanani. You take into your possession a human being that is not Jewish. The halacha, first of all, demands the first thing you do when you take him to your home is you have to put him in the mikvah and give him a bris milah. And he's obligated to observe all the mitzvahs equivalent to a noshim archayef. He's not allowed to be mechal Shabbos. Could you imagine this? You take a slave into your home, he has to fulfill all of the mitzvahs. But yet, we do seem to have an indication that an Eved Kanani is in a class that's not very honorable, because the pasuk says le'olam bohem ta'avodu. Don't you ever dare free him. Don't you ever dare free an Eved Kanani. He has to work for you forever. If you free the Eved Kanani, he's a slave. And Chazal tell us that if you one day you decide that you don't want to feed him, you say to him, listen, you're my slave. You work for me. But you know something? I'm not going to give you lunch. Lunch? You go out into the street and you beg for lunch. Go to the subway and beg people to give you some quarters. Play an instrument on the subway. Someone shall throw some quarters. And then go to bagel hole on the way home and buy yourself a bagel. And make sure you're back at 1 o'clock to do the laundry, to clean the windows, and to mop the floor, and to do whatever I want you to do. And if I don't have one for you to do, I'll just make up something for you to do. I'll do whatever I want you, just to keep you busy. Technically, you can do that, the Gemara says. You can tell the slave, you're my slave, you work for me. Lunch, I'm not giving you lunch. You go out to Avenue J and beg for money. You can do that. So what kind of signal does that send to us? That an Eved Kanani, he is subhuman. I'm not allowed to free him. It's a crime for me to let him loose on the streets. He has to be a slave. Don't allow him to lose the status of an Eved. Number two, I can treat him with cruelty to the degree where I can tell him, you're going to work for me, I'm not going to even give you lunch. You have to go find yourself lunch. Technically, that's permitted. Now, there are other things. Technically, you can beat him, you can hit him, you can do to him whatever you need to do to put him in this place. So it does seem that there is the Torah is presenting that an Eved is not a very honorable person. On the other hand though, the Torah seems to indicate that an Eved has quite a number of rights. Now here's the first thing, which many people do not know, and this totally changes everything. According to Halacha, it is categorically forbidden to force a person, a non-Jew, to become a slave. All of the slaves in America came about through kidnapping. They were forced into labor. It is categorically forbidden for a Jew to go in the street and to find a non-Jew and say, Gatya, you're mine. Don't move. This is a holdup. You're my slave. Come with me. I'm going to force you to be my property. There is no such thing. The only way a non-Jew in halacha can enter into the status of being an Eved Kanani is if he willingly sells himself. That changes the equation 180 degrees.
When you have a Muhammad or the
Shalom. Oh, so that's war. That's war in Hanami. That might be in the, he doesn't actually talk about that. That's a different situation. That's a Muhammad. In a war, then there are situations where you can take a slave to yourself. But today we don't have wars. We don't have wars where you can go and you can acquire people. It doesn't work like that. The only way you can acquire a slave, a non-Jewish slave, is where the non-Jew says, you know something, it's in my best interest to be a slave. My economic opportunity is extremely limited. It's a dangerous world. It's a good idea for me to sell myself to you. Give me a certain amount of money. I'll take that money and give it to my family. Have an endowment fund. And I'll be your slave. I will become your property. There is no such thing as ownership of another human being unless that human being willingly submits and sells himself. So you talk about Jews supporting slavery, it's ridiculous. It's no such thing. In America, all the slaves in the South were all kidnapped. Every single one of them. Every single last one of them was kidnapped. That is halachically forbidden.
Not that it makes it any better, but a lot of them, I mean, a good portion of them were sold by their own tribal leaders to the whites. I mean, they were kidnapped by their own tribal leaders.
Exactly. They were all kidnapped.
To the whites,
exactly.
Who were looking for slaves.
There was a market. So the whites who were willing to buy them created a market that allowed them to be kidnapped. So the slavery in America is halachically illegal. We have a misunderstanding. We think that in America, listen, in the olden days, that's the way the world was. In the olden days, slavery was part of civilization. That is incorrect. Maybe it was part of civilization by the non-Jews. They were corrupt. They were wicked in enslaving human beings. But nowhere in the Torah is there such a thing where one human being is allowed to force another human being to become his property.
But what about after a war, the captured?
So a war may be different. A war, but the rules of war are very complicated. I don't know all the rules. You have to look in the Rambam and see how everything is done. But generally speaking, the slavery that we know historically existed in this world did not come about through war. The slavery that we know, certainly in America and throughout most of the world, was done plain pashut through kidnapping. Which is one of the averas of the Aseres Hadibros of Loi Tignoiv, and Rashi there says the Gneva there refers to a stealing someone's body and making them into a slave, and that is categorically forbidden. So that's the first thing. Now the next thing is, this is a very important insight. If a person injures a slave, it's the Ferish Apostle. If you knock out an eye or one of the chof dalad, the tooth, or for that matter, any one of the chof dalad roshei evarim, the slave goes free. That's halacha by an eved kanani, not by an eved evri. That's halacha by an eved kanani. An eved kanani, if a person, he sells himself to you as a slave. Person, he doesn't have parnasa, he has a family, he's a non-Jew living somewhere in some country, or living anywhere in this world, he needs the money, so he says it's a great deal. Give me $100,000, I'll be your slave. This way I'll support my family, and this way I'll also have a life. Because what am I doing now, roaming the streets, begging for money in the subway? I'd rather live in your home, I'll live in the basement, I'll do all the work for you. It's good, I don't have many skills, I have a limited skill set, it's in my best interest. Let me sell myself to you as a slave, and I'll have a lot of money, whatever the going rate for a slave is. I'll give it to my family. I'll set up an endowment fund, whatever I'll do. It's in my best interest. Okay, fine. Then you have to be careful how you treat him. You just can't go kick him and abuse him. Because you can abuse, obviously, there is some concept of discipline. If a person sells himself as a slave, there is an understanding. You have to appreciate this point. That if you are selling yourself as my property, you understand you better behave. And if you don't behave, I'm going to give you a zetz. That's really what part of what selling yourself as a slave means. You're not going to abuse another person. But if you're my property, you have to behave yourself. Don't embarrass me. Don't be a vildachaya. Don't walk around the streets and make trouble on your when you're off from work. Don't go and riot in Times Square. If you ride in Times Square, you're embarrassing me. You're my property. You come home, I'm going to punch you in the face. That's part of selling yourself. When you sell yourself, you are submitting to behaving loyally to your master, knowing there's a consequence that if you don't behave, you're going to be punished. You're going to be abused. But the Torah yet says, be careful how far you go. If you hit your slave so hard that he loses a tooth or he loses a limb, any one of the Chof Dal Rasha Ivarim, guess what? Your $1 million investment, I don't know what the price of a slave is, it's a lot of money, you lose. Okay, a slave is at least $100,000. Your entire investment goes down the drain in 1 second if you lift up your fist to your slave and you cause him harm, that he loses one of the Chof Dal Rasha Ivarim. The Torah is very careful to put restrictions upon you. Now here's the very interesting thing. What happens if you murder him in cold blood? You purchase, a person comes to you from a third world country and he says, you know, in my country, if you have $100,000, you're a billionaire in America. It's like you're a billionaire in America. And there in that country, I walk around naked in the forest. You know, I would love to be your slave. It would be a blessing for me. I'll have the money, I'll give it to my family, they'll be able to live like kings for the whole life in their country, and I'll love to work for you. I'll love to be in America, I'll get a green card, I'll be here, I'll be your slave, v'chulu v'chulu. Wonderful. One day, the master wakes up, he sees that his slave is misbehaving, he takes out a weapon, and he murders him in cold blood. What's the halacha? He's chayiv misa. He's chayiv misa, the same misa if he would go and he would kill another Jew. There's no difference. A slave is a human being, and if it's premeditated murder with witnesses and hasra, there is a chayiv misa. Misa's bezdin. This is no joke. And not only is there a chayiv misa, the Torah says if you kill a slave, it says words that it does not say concerning any other human being by a Jew. Nokoim yinokein. Hashem will avenge his blood. It's a curse. If Reuven kills Shimon, it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, Nokom Yinokim. Hashem will avenge his blood. And Rav Shamshon Rav Olhirsch asked this question, why is it so that the Torah has such harsh terms for killing a slave and it does not use these harsh terms when you kill another Jew? And he says, because if you kill another Jew, boy, are you in trouble. The family, they'll come knocking on your door very quickly. Okay, society will not tolerate it. If Reuven one day walks into shul and he murders in cold blood another member of the kehillah, he's in a lot of trouble. The community will make sure that he pays the price, and it'll be a lot of collateral damage. But if you wake up one day and you kill your slave, who could care less? So Hashem says, I care. Don't think you're going to get away with it. Rav Shamshon Rav Olhirsch says this. And that's why the Torah goes out of its way to say, don't take the life of another human being lightly. You murder him. Not only is murdering a slave equivalent to murdering another Jew, there's an additional curse. Nokom yinokem. Okay, that's a whole different picture. Now, it's also interesting. This is a very interesting idea that this historical note, he brings down these fascinating things, that when the Jews were exiled at the time of the Bais Hashem, they went to Rome, and when they were in Rome, there were different eras of persecution, Gzeres HaShmad. One of the takonos that the Romans, the laws, the edicts that they passed targeting Jews was, you're not allowed to free your slave. Because freeing slaves is a Jewish thing. This is an historical fact. Non-Jews never freed their slaves. Non-Jews abused their slaves. It was unheard of. Jews historically had slaves, but they were very kind to them. They were very good to them. They fed them well, they took care of them, they had respect for them, they treated them with dignity. And very often, a Jew felt that it's in the best interest of his slave that he go free. And Jews would free their slaves. The Romans took note of this, and they said, We don't like this. This is a Jewish nida, a Jewish thing to free a slave. Anyone that frees a slave, you're behaving like a Jew. You're going to be punished. You're not allowed to free slaves. Just like you're not allowed to observe Shabbos, and you're not allowed to wear tefillin, and you're not allowed to learn Torah, you're not allowed to free slaves, because freeing a slave was a Jewish trait. So even though historically the Jews were very good to their slaves, there's a very beautiful Rambam, and the Rambam describes how a person has to deal with an Eved Kenani. And the Rambam, he writes these very powerful words where you have to listen to his complaints, talk to him, be mechazek him. You treat him with respect. A slave is a human being who was created in the Tzelem Elohim, the image of Hashem, no different than anyone else. And when you have a slave in your possession, it is your duty. It is your duty. I'll read you some of the words of the Rambam. The Rambam, he writes, Mutar la'avoid be'eved kenani be'perach. Okay, the Rambam begins that if a person acquires, again, how do you acquire? The slave, number one, must sell himself to his master. Okay, it's voluntary. And there's an understanding. It's hard work, crushing labor, and you're allowed to work him. And then the Rambam goes on to say the following. V'yaf al pi sha'adin kach. Even though technically that's what it says in the contract, if you sell yourself willingly to me as my slave, I can force you to work with crushing hard labor. The Rambam continues, Midas chasidus, it is an act of piety, the darke chokhma, and it's just practical wisdom. Sheyiye odom, a person should be a rachaman, a compassionate person. The roidev tzedek, pursue righteousness. The lo yachbid uloi al avdoi, not to overwhelm your slave. The lo yotzar lo, not to torture him. The achileu v'yashkeu, you should give him to eat, give him to drink. Mikol ma'achol u'mikol mishtef, everything that you eat and drink. This is an eved kenani. You're not obligated to do so, but it's the right thing to do. The right thing to treat a slave with dignity. The Chachamim would give the slave every dish that they ate themselves. If you're eating a 10-course meal, you better make sure that your slave also has a seat at the table. They fed the slaves first. Just like you feed the animals first, you feed the slaves first. Look at the Nusach HaTfilah. In the Nusach HaTfilah we say, we ask Hashem to have rachmanis upon us, like the eyes of Avodim, El Yad Adonehem, Shifcha El Yad Gevirta. In America, you can never say these words. If you study the history of America, and you want to say, Hashem have rachmanis upon us, like the eyes of the Avodim, El Yad Adonehem. It's a joke. In America, the slaves who work for the masters in America, not all, but the vast majority, they looked at their master with contempt, with utter contempt and hate, and pachat. There was no relationship. The way the Torah, the way the Torah describes the relationship of a slave to a master is an acknowledgement that you are my master, and you have mercy upon me. The Pasuk says it all. That the master shows his servants, I'm here for you. I'm here to have rachamim upon you. I'm here to help you. I'm gonna care for you. I'm gonna give you everything that you possibly need. That's a whole different type of slavery than what we read about in the Civil War and what we read about historically. Okay, so it's totally wrong, 1,000% to think that what took place in America and takes place, because then all over the world today in some places, is, oh, according to halacha, it's acceptable. It's acceptable. It's just that today, you know, it's just not practical in halacha, in the modern world, that we can do something like this. People, it's very sad that there are B'nai Torah who think that what happened in America, you know, in the 18th century, oh, that's fine. That's That's the way it really should be. It's just that, you know, like the Chofetz Chaim, we're not today eligible that another human being should serve us. That is completely false. 1,000% false. Make no mistake about it. The way slaves were treated in America in the 18th century and going forward and before and after was halachically osur in bold, underlined. There is nothing to discuss. Kidnapping is categorically forbidden. Forbidden. And abuse is forbidden. Now, we have to also understand that a slave has to be put in his place. Okay, let's not, no, America today, we've gone a little bit to an extreme that's dangerous. It's dangerous. Okay, so if a person, once, no person's allowed to lord over another person, but that doesn't mean that another person's allowed to abuse you. You don't let your slave abuse you. Don't forget, you're the master, he's the slave. Know your place. And if the slave doesn't behave, it's very clear from Chazal that if the Torah has to go out of its way and say, if you knock out one of his 24 Evarim, the slave goes free, what is the Torah really telling you? I mean, this is Pasha, it's telling you, beat him, hit him, whip him. That's right, punch him. Just don't punch him that hard. Okay, the Torah, I think it's fair to say, is giving a master permission to abuse. It's not called abuse. It's, you have to be much more nuanced, to discipline his slave. Know your place. I'm the master, you're the slave. V'zehu, you voluntarily put yourself in this situation because it is to your benefit, for whatever the reason was, and know your place. If you start behaving in an arrogant way and making trouble for me, then the Torah says, beat him up. Be careful. Don't knock out his tooth. Don't harm him to a degree, because if you harm him too much, you're going to lose your investment. He's going to go free in a moment. If you murder him, you're going to get the death penalty. Hashem says, I'm going to curse you. Nakom yinakem. But it's understood there are roles. There's a master and there's a slave. And the slave has an expectation to behave in a certain way. And if you don't behave in a certain way, then what do you expect? You signed up for this. Okay, we have this problem today in the modern world of knowing your role, knowing your place, knowing the correct balance. Okay, now, let's go further. Okay, the Rambam, he really goes on and on and on about this. He says some very, very beautiful couple of words. He says, he quotes the Pasuk, "Ke'eni shiv chal yad gevirta v'chin lo yivazeyu biyad v'loy bidvarim." Do not despise him. Do not humiliate him. Not physically and not with words. La'avdus moshna kosav lo labusha. Here are the beautiful words of the Rambam. The Rambam says, a slave was given to you for service, not for humiliation. You were given the slave for him to serve, to do work. You were not given the slave as an outlet to let out steam for all of your frustrations in life. Yeah, you're in a bad marriage, so you want to go let out your anger on your slave? That's not why you have slaves. You have slaves for one reason. The lo yar be alav tzaka v'kas, the Rambam says, don't scream at him. Eli dabri mo benachas, gently. And listen to this. This is the most amazing thing in my opinion, because this is what people I find today are the most desperate of. They need someone to listen to them. What do people need the most today? You know what they need the most? They need a lot of things today. They need money, they need refuah, they need shidduchim, but you know what they need the most? It's just someone to listen. You know how many people just want just someone to talk, not even to talk, just listen, just sit there and listen. You can't solve their problems. There's nothing you can do for them. They know it, you know it. You give them 5 minutes to listen to them talk about it's amazing. And the Rambam says, "V'yishma ta'anoisav." Listen to his complaints. Listen to his frustration. You know, it's just in America, that's where they don't really have enough for the blacks. The blacks, know what they really want? They're very frustrated people. They really are. They need someone to listen to them like anyone else. And they're tired of just getting mussar. Do this, do this, do this. You're not going to be able to solve their problems. We know that, and they know that. Let them talk. Violence, put them in jail. but if they want to talk, it's very therapeutic for them just to talk. I don't think in America people give them a chance to talk, because the understanding is that if they talk, you have to have a solution. You don't have to have a solution. There is no solution. But to give them an opportunity to vent, not a protest. Protest is by them, a protest by definition is violent. By definition, the protest is violent. There's no such thing by them as a peaceful protest. No way. No, what?
Used to be.
No way. There's no such thing. Allowing them to have a protest means only violence. This is not shaykh. But to give them an opportunity just to talk. Put them on Zoom. And let them, they can't go, and I'll keep them away, physically away. And let them vent. What?
They're talking all the time.
No, they're not talking. They're not heard. Talking, you have to listen to you. The Rambam says, this is the solution. The Rambam says, Ella yidaber imo benachas v'yishma tanaisav. The Rambam does not say find solutions. The Rambam says just listen. Listen. And when you listen, we know that amongst our own people, listening goes a very long way. And that's what the Rambam says. Now, I'm not calling people to be slaves. I don't get into trouble with you. I'm not calling them. I'm saying people that are frustrated. The chayin mufurish bedarke Iyov. Iyov says there's a ferish apostik. Iyov says, Hatoivim sheshtabech bem im emas mishpat eved v'amosi berivam imodi halay bebeten asuni as. He goes on to quote the pasuk. Iyov went, and it says that Iyov went and he was very good to his slaves. All right, he goes on and on and on to describe over here how a person has to deal with slaves. It is an eye-opening Rambam to understand what the proper approach to slaves are. Now, he goes here through a whole thing which I don't really understand. He has over here thing which I really, who am I to argue with him? B'kitz and Nimrutz, you have to read the book. He says a chiddush, which again I totally think is taken way out of context, but this is what he says very quickly. He gives numerous examples in the Torah where the Torah allowed bidyevets. For example, the Rambam says the reason why we bring korbanos is an outlet for worshiping idols. In ancient times, everyone worshipped idols. Halalu oivdi avodah zarah, ve'halalu oivdi avodah zarah. So when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, we had this need to bring sacrifices to the gods. So Hashem says, you know what? Instead of bringing the animal to a god, bring the animal to me. Really, there's no purpose in taking the life of an animal. It's total nonsense. It's ridiculous. You take an animal and you slaughter it and you collect its blood and you put it on the mizbeach. What are you doing here already? This doesn't make any sense. You're right. It doesn't make any sense. But because Klal Yisrael was so used to this, they had a need. So you know what? Bidyeved, I can't fight human nature. So bring the sacrifice to me. The Ramban goes berserk. He goes ballistic. How could you say such a thing like that? Korbanos, the Kedusha, the Beis HaMikdash. But the Rambam says there's an element in this. Another example, a divorce. According to the Christians are really right. The Christians are real. There's no divorce.
Catholics.
The Catholics. No divorce. How could there be a divorce? The Torah sanctions divorce. Why? Human nature, so he wants to say, is the Torah cannot fight against human nature. In human nature comes a point in time where things don't work out, even though it's not perfect your midos. Why should there be Torahs? No. Human beings are human beings. Let them get divorced.
Plus, there's the element of the kasuba, which is not necessarily reflected
right.
universally.
Correct, correct. It's another idea.
But, okay. But I agree with this whole concept.
Eishes yifas toya.
That's right.
Eishes yifas toya. What are you doing? You go to battle, you take a woman? What kind of, you sit in koil for 20 years and that's what you do? You go out to battle, you marry a shiksa? The Torah says, listen, a person, a human being is a human being. Halavai, he should reach the exalted Yerushman that we want, but not everyone is eligible. You have to acknowledge the frailty and the failings of a person, and you have to legitimize a person, the weakness of man. Another example, Malchus. How could it possibly be that in Klal Yisrael we have a Melech? Soim tosim alecha Melech. Hashem is the Melech. Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, Hashem Yimloich. Human beings have a need to ignore Hashem and have a human being be the Melech. Also, a long, long list describes, I'll give you an example, there's a halach of a person, normally if a person goes over to someone else in the street, in shul, and he says, in front of the whole shul, you mamzer. He calls the guy on the other side of the shul, you're not wearing a mask, you're a mamzer. You're a mamzer. So what is the halach in Shulchan Aruch? The guy who goes and is mevaz or something by calling him a mamzer, you take him to Bezdin, and he has to pay boishes. Bezdin makes a calculation, they have a formula. What is the penalty? How much does he have? $100, $1,000, $10,000? You called your friend a mamzer in front of the whole shul? You were mevaz him? We have a formula, a mathematical formula. This is the penalty. You will now pay him whatever the money is. What happens if the other person took him to court? He accused him of being a ganef, the other person. He accused him, you know, you didn't pay the rent, you didn't do this, you know, you owe me money for this and that, you didn't pay membership, come to shul, and the gabbai says, sir, you know, you haven't paid membership dues in 3 years. We're not giving you an aliyah. He says that in front of the whole shul. And the fellow knows he did pay membership dues the last 3 years. It must be that the gabbai did not see the books. He didn't talk to the accountant. And this fellow in front of the whole shul says, we're not giving you an aliyah. You haven't paid membership dues in 3 months. And I say back to him in front of the whole shul, you mamzer, how dare you say that about me? You mamzer, you good for nothing mamzer. You know what it says in Shulchan Aruch? I'm potter. I don't have to pay him one penny for calling him a mamzer. How could that be? If I walk into shul one day and I see he's not wearing a mask and I say, you mamzer, they take me away in chains to the police, to the bezdin, and they make me pay $5,000 to be mevaza him in shul. But if I'm sitting in shul and I say, you know, I haven't had an aliyah here in a long time, the only thing I deserve an aliyah, and he says in front of the whole shul, well, you haven't paid membership dues in 3 years. And that's not true, because I did. And I said, what? You mamzer? You know what it says in Shulchan Aruch? It's human nature. When someone attacks you and says about you, you've committed a crime that you know, claims that you've committed a crime that you know that you did not commit, it's only natural for a human being to get worked up, to get angry, and to fight back.
So when he calls a mamzer, he calls a back mamzer, he doesn't have to pay.
Okay. It's like a lifna either in a sense, no?
Well, okay, the person was mistaken. In other words, Shulchan Aruch and the Torah, over and over and over again, he cites in numerous examples of these concepts, is where in Mesilas Yesharim, if you learn Mesilas Yesharim, your whole life, every single day, and you shuckle the whole day, it will never happen that you'll call another person a mamzer no matter what. A person that sits and learns Torah the whole day and now it is a melchemes mitzvah, and he goes to battle and he sees an isha, eishes yifas toyar, och, a shiksa, och. How could there be such a parsha in the Torah called eishes yifas toyar? Malchus? Hashem is the Melech.
So you've been in the heat of battle.
Shmuel. But even in the heat of battle, there is an expectation you should reach an exalted level of sanctity. Malchus? Shmuel said, you want a melech? What am I, a chopped liver? What am I? Hashem is that. And Hashem says to Shmuel, Shmuel, who are you? What about me? Everyone is complaining. I'm the melech. Hashem is right. What's going on? Again, there's something called Plan B. And Plan B is legitimate. It's sanctioned. It's part of the Torah HaKadosha. There's Malchus. There's a Melech. There is an Eishes Yifas Toyah. There's something called Gerushin. It doesn't always work out. You have to be realistic. There are Korbanos. Because not every people, I want to bring a sacrifice to a god. We don't appreciate this in ancient times. There's an outlet. The Torah went out of its way to acknowledge that human beings are human beings. There's a goal. There is a spitz. There's a goal that a human being should reach an exalted level of sanctity. There's this wish, but it's that's an ideal. Most of the 99.9% of humanity will never reach that level. It's something to aspire for, but the Torah is a very real book. It acknowledges that we're never going to get there. So in the meantime, you need a mahalach how to live in this world with all of your frailties and failures. And I'm going to give you the rules. I'm going to acknowledge your failures and your frailties, and we're going to legitimize it. The Malchus of Klal Yisrael, it's split. Yeravam ben Nevat. He was anointed by a Navi. How can a Navi come along and anoint an illegitimate Melech? Because you know it doesn't work out. If the Malchus doesn't work out, Klal Yisrael can't be Kitzoyin Asher Ein Lohem Royeh. So that's right. You have to anoint and legitimize a Malchus in Yisrael, even though it's in blatant violation of Lo Yosser Shevet Yehuda. The Chashmonaim. We have the Chanukah story. But the Chashmonaim are illegitimate. No? Eis Lasso, Eis LaHashem. Okay, this is a principle which runs through the entire Torah over and over. And he spends half the article on this. Now, he comes to a conclusion which I personally have a very big problem with. I'm shocked. I'm really shocked what he says over here. And he says, slavery is the same thing. No. The shocking thing, slavery is in this category. It's a frailty. This is what he says. I disagree with this. I really do disagree with this. He says slavery is a frailty of a failure of humanity. How could one person have the chutzpah noira, to demand that you work, that you are my property? Another human being, I am created in the Tzelem Elokim, and you are created in the Tzelem Elokim. Nevertheless, you're my property. Ha ha ha. You're my property. Bow down in front of me. You're my slave. You don't behave yourself, I'll give you a kick. I'll give you such a zetz. You know, you'll know what hit you. And you can't take me to court. As long as I don't kill you, and as long as I don't chop off one of your 24 Rosh Eivarim, and as long as I follow the rule, excuse me? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to go and to force, not force, I mean, whatever, not force, we're saying, who do you think you are to allow such a reality where another human being can work for you? So he says, it is absolutely corrupt. That's right. This concept is something which indeed is not acceptable. But that's the way the world works. That's the world. That's the reality. The reality is there are human beings that are dominant, that are very powerful, and are very smart and clever, and have worked very hard to rise up in society. And there are people, there's a class of society that doesn't have a skill set and may in certain situations not okay, this is, I don't want to be a racist or anything, but they it might be in their best interest, in fact, that they serve as in some capacity as slaves. And humanity, man, has created such a system of master-slave. Is it an ideal? No, it's not an ideal. just like Avodah Zarah is non-ideal, not just like all. But the Torah embraced slavery, legitimized the something called an Eved Kenani, and the Torah says, Lo'olam bohem yavodu, and the Torah repeats the concept, the principle of slavery again and again in the Torah, with its set of rules, okay, its set of rules that has to be voluntary. You can't force a person to be a slave. You have to treat it.
Limitations on slavery.
Right, that we went through.
Limitations on malchus.
Right, right, correct, correct.
Right.
Right.
And the other items, they're elevated in some way.
Correct. The Torah's definition of slavery is light years different than the slavery that we've seen in the world and what existed in America 200 years ago. There's nothing to talk about. We mentioned that 100 times. It was halachically a crime. There's no doubt about what took place in this country, in the formation, the founding of this country, is clear as day, beyond a shadow of a doubt, halachically a crime. Forbidden. For some reason, it doesn't even register with us. Forget about the goyim. How they're dealing with it. Now they're struggling with it. They're now struggling with it. We, an Orthodox Jew, it doesn't even register, as I said before. Why? We make two mistakes. We think halachically it was correct. That's mistake number one we make. And number two, we say, hey, we've been through it ourselves. We went to the Holocaust. We only arrived here in this country 70 years ago, and we came from the Holocaust, and we suffered in the Holocaust worse. Well, they suffered. No one killed 6 million slaves. Okay, no one murdered 6 million slaves. So we look at slavery in America, we couldn't care less. So first of all, that's not right. Just because we suffered, just because Avodim Hayinu Lefarah B'Mitzrayim, just because we suffered persecution of 1,900, we suffered persecution in our Hatari exists, doesn't mean that it's right for them either. That's mistake number one that we make. Number two is, the type of slavery that the Torah legitimizes is nothing to do with the type of slavery that existed in this country years ago. It's a world of a difference. So Orthodox Jews make two, the average, including myself, it's so ingrained in us, it's almost impossible to separate ourselves from this, but we make these two major mistakes. Okay, so what? Just because we went to the Holocaust and Avodim Lufaro, so what? Two rights don't make, two wrongs don't make a right. They also suffer. That's right. What right did they have to go and torture these people and kill them and kidnap them and terrorize them? Now, not, by the way, not every situation of slavery was like that. Yeah, I have to be very careful. You can't generalize. You have to study the history. But more or less, there were terrible crimes that were committed, more or less. And the mistake number two is the type of slavery that exists in the world today and existed in America then as absolutely nothing to do with the Torah's definition of slavery, which it endorses and it accepts. Now, he goes even further, which to me is very disturbing. And he says, even the form of slavery, which the Torah endorses and accepts and allows, with all of these very elaborate rules, he basically says, is wrong. I don't know why he says that. He says, it's wrong. If a non-Jew comes, this is Rabbi Lichtenstein talking now, okay? He's saying a tremendous chiddush, which I'm just telling you what he says, and I want to tell you why I think it's wrong. He says that if a non-Jew comes along, comes to a Jew and says, listen, I want to ask you a favor. I want to sell myself to you as a slave. What's the going rate for a slave today on the market? Make believe it's $100,000. I would like you to give me $100,000. I'll take the money, I'm going to put it away in an endowment fund for my family in some third world country. They'll be able to live like kings for the rest of their lives. And I'll be your slave. I'll do whatever you want to do 24/7. I'll live in your house. My whole life will be yours. And you say, you know, it's a good idea. It's a good business arrangement. According to Rabbi Lichtenstein, that is awesome. According to the Iker Hadin, according to the Iker Hadin, such an arrangement, even though it's done with will, is cruel. It's cruel to do such a thing, to accept such an offer. Because the end of the day is, one human being will be the property of another human being. That is ethically, morally flawed, corrupt. Even though the Torah provides all of the rules and you're going to treat him well, and he's the one who's initiating. And you're not going to abuse him, and you're going to give him good, and you're going to follow the Rambam. You're going to be a psychologist, and you're going to be kind to him, you're going to be good to him, you're going to do everything for him. He says, however, ideally, it is ethically and morally wrong that there should exist such a reality in this world that one human being is the property of another human being. How then did the Torah allow this? So he says, because it's absolutely no different than divorce, malchus, eishes yifas toyar, and a division of the malchus that was sanctioned. It is a weakness of humanity that such a thing, the Torah has, it's part of plan B. There's plan A, and there's plan B. Now, I don't know, that's a little bit of a stretch to me. Why? Basically, why is because there's a major difference between all of the examples that he's giving and this example. And that is, in all the examples, it has nothing to do with someone else. Even Eishes Yifas Toyar, she would be dead. Here, she's going to be your wife. She's going to be a regular wife. You're going to marry her. She's going to be your wife. Okay, so you're taking a wife. The problem is that she's a shiksa, she's a non-Jewish woman. It's all about, there's no harm done. Malchus, oh, very good, we have a melech. Who's suffering? Hashem is suffering, but another human being is not suffering. Let's talk about, what was the other examples? Divorce. It's good for both people. Both sides are happy to separate. It's a good thing. What other examples? Avodah Zarah. You want to go bring a sacrifice? So no harm done. The animal may not be so happy that it's dead, but no harm done to society. All of the examples that he discusses, that he says, that the Torah acknowledges that human beings are failures, and we have to construct a plan B to work with in the framework of man's failures, are all examples of where no harm done to anyone else in society. But the institution of slavery, by definition, is an institution where you are harming another person. You are treating another element of society as subhuman. It's a much greater match to say that the Torah is telling you that it's a b'di'evet, and we're going to submit to the norms of society. In society, man is a failure, and this is what man comes to. So the Torah goes along with it. The Torah is, listen, human beings, they're weak, and they make mistakes, and we have to adapt and accept so if one human being enslaves another human being, we have to legitimize this, and we have to create a framework of how it's going to be done. Maybe you agree with this. What?
What does he do with Evan Ivry?
Evan Ivry is not a slave. Evan Ivry is...
So he has no problem with Evan Ivry.
No one has a problem. No one. Evan Ivry is no one has a problem with
Evan Ivry. You give a wife to Evan Ivry.
Okay, that's different. Where is that? The whole different. That's a whole different story. Evan Ivry is not an issue. Evan Ivry is a king. Evan Ivry, he's basically a worker. He's a worker. It's a 6-year contract.
The kids become what?
The slaves. The kids become... You give them a shifcha kananis, and the slaves are yours.
Right.
Okay, but that's a different time. What is, now, if I'm going to disagree with him, with Rabbi Lichtenstein, so what am I trying to say? I don't know what the result is, but all I can say is, all I'm trying to say is, I don't like that, to put this slavery in a category where the Torah is embracing the weakness of man. I don't think the Torah would accept such a thing. To allow one human being to be enslaved by another human being, and the Torah is saying, listen, if this is the way the world operates, people do this, okay, I go along with it. I don't like that. The Torah doesn't go along with it. That when someone else suffers, you know, the Torah also has limits. The Torah allows certain things, and it doesn't allow a lot more. The Torah absolutely acknowledges man's weaknesses, his failures, his frailties, and works with it to give it legitimacy, how it think, but there are boundaries. Torah is not going to go and let you do whatever you want to go do. If slavery represents a failure of humanity, the Torah, I don't think, doesn't sit well with me that the Torah would allow it, would legitimize it, because it's going too far. That would be going too far. But then the question falls back on me. So how then does the Torah allow slavery? So it has to be, maybe what I'm saying is even the bigger chiddush, what he's saying is, there has to be in slavery something noble. And the Chofetz Chaim really says something like this. And this is where we're getting into an area where we're really lost, where I'm totally lost. So if it's not going to be, let's try to, in a few moments we have left. Right, Lichtenstein is suggesting a chiddush that is really beyond words. Is that slavery represents the failure of humanity, of society. It is a failure. And it fits, it has a lot of friends, a lot of cousins. Because we can go through the Torah, and I can read for word from all the various Rishonim, that there are so many mitzvahs which represent man's failure to achieve greatness of what Hashem really wants from him. And the Torah says, no, it's okay. So you didn't become the God of Hadar. No, so you go out to battle, you see an Eishes Yifas Torah, you want to marry her? No, okay, I understand. You have a taiva. If you would have learned in Kol another 10 years and reached a higher level of Yiras Shemayim, maybe it wouldn't have happened. Maybe you would not have the need to marry this woman. But you took too many coffee breaks when you were in Kol. You took too many coffee breaks and you didn't reach that exalted level. So no, okay. He wants to say that slavery is in that same category. Man is aggressive. Man is arrogant. Man is always looking for trouble. And man has succeeded in committing a crime of enslaving other people. That's a reality in this world. That is a reality in this world. Enters the Torah. And he's a Lichtenstein is saying, no, this is just another example of where man went wrong. Where man made it. So you know what? The same way I legitimized another 20 things, I'm going to give you another bone. I'm going to legitimize slavery. Slavery, no, it's good. It's okay. It's okay. Continue committing the crime that you've been doing. Just do it my way. Do it my way. I give you very, very strict rules. Very strict rules. Don't force, don't kidnap. Don't force anyone into slavery. Read what it says in the Rambam. Be good to the slave. Listen to him. Be kind to him. Be generous. Give him parnasa. That's what he says. I am suggesting that this is a pill that's too difficult to swallow. Because for the Torah to say you failed and we're going to let you go, the Torah, you know, if someone takes the regents, and he gets a 64, do you know what the rule is? I'm thinking back to myself now from 100 years ago. The passing grade is 65. If I'm not mistaken. I don't even remember anymore. Mm-hmm. But I vaguely remember that New York State Board of Regents says the passing grade is 65, but if the student gets 64, he also passes. He also passes. No, he didn't make it. But 64, you go on to the next class. But if you get a 63, you fail. No ands, if, or buts. If the student gets a 63, you take the class again. You don't get a regents diploma. You're done. So everything in all the examples are all examples of where we got a 64. No, you got passing grade is 65. All of these examples means we got a 64. The Torah says, no, 64, it's okay, you pass. In my book, the concept that a one human being can be the property of another human being is a 63. It's not a 64. I know man is an aggressive beast that dominates and conquers and is selfish and arrogant and desperate for honor and prestige and needs cheap labor. I understand that. So man has failed by enslaving other people. But in my book, in my little mind, it would appear that I understand, but it's a 63, not a 64. And the Torah would no way come along at Matan Torah and say, no, you got a 63 in the concept of slavery, I give you a pass. We're going to legitimize it my way. In a kosher, we're going to kosherify it. We're going to kosher slavery in a kosher way. Sorry, it doesn't sit well with me. But yet, the Torah does legitimize slavery. So that tells me, when we talk about slavery, we really don't know what we're talking about. There is something about the concept of slavery that needs to be much better understood than the way we understand it now. The way we understand it now is, you know, one person is the property of another person. There's something that we're missing. There's something about slavery. The Chofetz Chaim, he says to some degree, is that slavery cannot exist in our times because there's no such thing where one human being deserves that another human being should work for, should be his property. From the words of the Chofetz Chaim, it implies that slavery, there is something noble and there is something that is 100% correct in slavery, but it is 100% not practical. Because today, we don't have human beings today that are noble and are pure and are deserving that another human being should be their slave. So the whole thing today is totally moot. But theoretically, we go back into the time of the Torah, there were people that were holy. They were sacred. Their every moment in life was devoted to Hashem for a purpose, to a mission, and even by a non-Jew. There were non-Jews. Today, a non-Jew is not even a non-Jew. A non-Jew today is just a beast. In ancient times, there's such a principle of where a non-Jew knows his role in this world. You put into this world, you have a purpose. I'm not here to do tayag mitzvos. I'm here to do the zayin mitzvos b'nei noach. I'm here to achieve this role. Rebbe and Antoninos. Antoninos.
You had Chazal who had
Avadim. Avadim, right, exactly. Tevi Avad. There's a whole ton of stuff. There was something, Rebbe and Antoninos. Antoninos was a guy. He was the Kesar. He learned Bechavrusa with Rabbeinu HaKadosh every single day. Shnei Goyim Bevidnech. Vayelich Lidrois Es Hashem. What did Shem say to Rivka? In your belly, there are Shnei Goyim. There is Yaakov and there is Esav. Shnei Geyim. Rabbeinu HaKadosh and Antoninos. What does that mean? Antoninos has just been given legitimacy by Shem. Shem has declared, if you're going to be a guy, this is the guy you're supposed to be. A guy who's a Yorei Shemayim. You have achieved your purpose in this world. You're an exalted human being. An exalted human being deserves 100% that other human beings serve him. It's not a 63, it's a 100%. The problem though is, today, the Chofetz Chaim says, today there is no one on this planet that you can say about them that they have been legitimized as being a person that is deserving that someone else should serve them. But theoretically, there is such a principle in this world where there are exalted people, noble people who deserve people to serve them. So Erich Lichtenstein is taking an approach that slavery is the survival of the fittest. Survival of the fittest. I got where I am through hard work, and therefore, even though I may be a para adam, a vilde chaya, I'm the boss. I'm the boss, so you get down and clean my shoes. Too bad for you. I'm the boss. That's the way the world works. Is that an ideal thing? No, but that's the way. The world is not 100%. The world is a 65. Slavery may even be a 64, but it's a 64. So along comes the Torah. The Torah did this numerous times. I would like the world to be 100%. Some things are 80, some are 90, some are 70, some are 68, some are 65. No, you got a 64? The New York State Board of Regents says that unofficially, if the kid gets a 64, pass him. Slavery is the worst, but it's a 64. Pass him, legitimize it, do it my way. But the truth is, who do you think you are to tell another human being to polish your shoes? Who do you think you are? No, kach darko shelo ilam. It's another frailty of humanity. That's Roy Lichtenstein's approach. That's what he says. I'm not making half the articles. This is what he says. What? David Lichtenstein.
I agree with
him. David Lichtenstein. I personally, I don't like it. I personally feel that slavery is a 63. And the New York State Board of Regents says if you get a 63, you fail. Oh, but how could it be that there's slavery in the Torah then? Lo'oilam mochem yavodu, avodin. You know what it means? We don't know what slavery is. We're totally lost. It's not just Torah gives nice rules, treat him nicely, be kind to him. In order to have a slave, you have to be deserving to have a slave. Not just survival of the fittest. You have to really deserve to have a slave. We don't even understand what this means, but in ancient times and in ideal times, a human being can reach an exalted level where that's right. It's fitting that other people serve him. It's foreign to us, such a concept. But the Torah is saying there is such a thing. What?
There's a side benefit to it. Maybe that's what the Chafetz Chaim was alluding to with Avdus and Malkus, because they really go together. And that is to understand the relationship. It's a model of a relationship between man.
It's a model. It's a model. Right, right. It's a model. Hashem is certainly fit, of course. So where was...
What it means for Hashem to be the Melech, so we have the hint.
Correct. At least you have a model. Okay.
Right.
Okay, so this is our discussion. We touched upon a couple of things, and hopefully this should lead to some better relations with some of our fellow citizens of this country. Halavai. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. And please, I encourage you to check the sources, check the facts. Here it is. Headlines number 3.
We're 2 weeks, everybody. I'm going to Israel tonight.
Mark, have a safe trip.
You going tonight?
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay. Okay. For how long?
2 weeks, May 5th.
2 weeks, that's it? 2 weeks?
Well, I was supposed to be there March 7th.
Okay. Enjoy. Have a safe trip.
Here's some virtual tzedakah money.
But anyway.
Be well. Okay. Zay gazant.
Rabbi Levine?
Yes.
Good afternoon. It's Mark Hershkovitz.
Yes.
Couple comments?
Yes, please.
I'm not sure I agree with you that slavery was used to build the infrastructure.